This conference will now be recorded.
Hello and good morning, everyone, and welcome to our third GRN webinar. My name is Dan Halls. We have got many people who've come along this morning from a range of different companies, different sectors, all of which are very keen to find out from Jacob from Pearson Education a little bit about how he sees the graduate skill set changing as we emerge from this pandemic. So it's going to take about an hour. There will be the opportunity to ask any questions in the chat facility. So please do feel free to put your questions in there, and then I'll put them to Jacob as we go along and also at the end. Just as a brief introduction to myself. My name's Dan Hawes, and I'm from Graduate Recruitment Bureau. Graduate Recruitment Bureau are the UK's leading independent recruitment consultancy for students and graduates, and the go-to platform, I guess, for recruiters who are seeking first-class student and graduate talent. Set up in 1997 by myself and a fellow graduate, we now have over 65 staff and over 1,800 clients across a variety of different sectors, companies who are very well known, such as the Post Office, IBM, Unilever, and Ocado, to name but a few, but also many fast-growing SMEs that need graduate talent. Now, GRN was set up back in 2009. This was essentially for our clients, but also for friends of GRB. And the idea was to bring together all of these people who tend to be HR advisors, HR business partners, recruitment directors, talent leads, that kind of level of person, to come along and discuss current topics presented by a mix of relevant and influential speakers. Now, we usually had our very popular masterclass events every quarter in London, kindly hosted by the Institute of Chartered Accountants. Now, unfortunately, they're closed for the time being. So while that has been the situation, we've reverted to having webinars every 2 weeks. This is our third webinar, and we are planning to run another one in the next 2 weeks and the following 2 weeks after that. Now, the idea is that we get together, we discuss current topics, and the main part of it is the Q&A. So hopefully you'll be able to benefit from some of the questions that are posed by other members, and we'll get Jacob to answer some of those questions as we go along. Right, I'm going to stop showing my screen now so we can see myself. Hello, good morning. I am going to hand over to Jacob in a second. Before we do that, could everyone just make sure that they've muted their microphones? And so we don't get any interference. Jacob, over to you.
All right, thank you. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking the time out of your day here to join us for this. Yeah, I've been to a couple of events in the past, a couple of the masterclasses, and it was great when Dan asked if could do this webinar for you. Just as we're getting ready to share screen here. You know, I've been with Talent Lens for close to 2 years now, and been in the occupational psychology industry for just over three. New to my CV, I've added Daddy Daycare to my as a business to my last 2 months. Yeah, if you hear any screams in the background, that's just my wife trying to keep them happy while we're doing this. So I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. So yeah, hope you're all well, having success navigating this new normal, as we've spoken about, that the COVID 19 has brought us. So just waiting to be able to share my screen here, Dan. So So as Dan said, as I go through this, I know there's going to be a bunch of questions that pop up. Though I have a couple of scenarios I'll walk you through as well, and ask you some questions. Just send your responses over on the chat to Dan so that he can get those over to me as we kind of go through this. Dan, I'm still not able to see the share screen option on my end. I can't hear you either.
It is there, Jacob. If you click,
it won't let me. It's not highlighted.
Dan, it's Jenny Austin here from GLB. I don't know if you need to possibly make Jacob the presenter to give him the option to actually present his screen, because I know if I click the button, it says you have to be able to be the presenter. I don't know if you've got settings your side changed for Jacob.
Yeah, let me double check that. Let's have a look.
The world of technical challenges at the moment.
Right.
It's a nightmare. I'm running an assessment center tomorrow for some of our clients, and it just always fills me with dread when there's so much tech at the moment that can go wrong.
Yep.
Okay, try that, Jacob.
There we go.
Marvelous. Sorry about that.
No, we're good. Okay. All right, let me just clean some of this up a little bit. Perfect. All right, yes. Yeah, so again, thank you for joining in. We'll get rolling on this. So again, the new normal, I mean, just kind of, we're going to have to rethink where we're at and what's happening with this scenario here. I'm trying to see here. How do I? So the big question on everybody's minds is, how will coronavirus change, really the world and the world of work? There's still so many questions and scenarios we just don't know enough, about to answer right now. It seems like every day we're getting new information, new scenarios with that. How we can and what we can do is look at where we were heading before the pandemic, and really see how it has shaped that trajectory going forward. The world we live in right now, many observers believe that we're beginning of the fourth industrial revolution. Developments in genetics, AI, robotics, 3D printing, just to name a few, are all building on and amplifying one another. This will lay the foundation for a revolution more comprehensive than anything we've seen before. Also changing is how we work in this fourth industrial revolution. The ability to work from home and still be productive has really been tested these last few months. For one, many leaders have seen small, nimble teams built in a hurry to deal with the emergency made important decisions faster and better. And having learned that, that a flatter organization that delegates decision making down to a dynamic network of teams can be more effective. Going back to that though, the key there is decision making and how are they making those decisions and are they making the right decisions? And we'll address that here a little later. But in just again, looking at that world we live in, this new fourth industrial revolution, in many industries and countries, the most in-demand occupations or specialties, they didn't even exist 10 or even 5 years ago. And the pace of change is set to accelerate. It already has. Again, the pandemic has just kicked this into gear. By one popular estimate, 65% of children entering primary school today will ultimately end up working in a completely new job that doesn't even exist yet. The skill sets required both now and in these new occupations will change within most industries and really transform how and where people work. So with a handful of exceptions, that whole job for life concept, became a thing of the past. And for most successful employees, the ones best equipped to move from job to job, from industry to sector, those are going to be the ones with the transferable skill sets they're going to be the most successful. Again, we kind of knew this coming in. The pandemic has really kicked this transition into overdrive. And so what we have seen is an increase for the need for higher skilled workers, technicians, and managers. The Office of National Statistics survey has shown that 44% of the working population were employed in higher level occupational groups, which include managers, directors, senior professionals, and technical occupations. So there are now 3 million more people in those roles than in 2001. And over half of all working graduates and 11% of non-working graduates now work in jobs requiring high-level skills, while a further 30% of graduates are now engaged in upper to middle-level skilled work. So, and then you throw in technical advances, business innovations. These are all drivers of these changes in labor market structure and are likely to continue to impact the workplace. It's going to. So what's that mean? That means that the ideal employee's toolkit has changed and it's going to change. So if it's changing, and in this changing world requires different competencies for your employees, really, what are the old and what are the new skills required for an employee's success? So a major report published in 2016 by the World Economic Forum has compiled the following extensive survey of senior talent, strategy executives from around 400 leading global employers. They represent more than 13 million employees. So again, a large study there. The report asked chief HR and strategy officers what the current economic and technical shifts meant. So specifically for employment, skills, and recruiting across industries and geographies. So they were asked to rank the top skills required by employees and recruits across a wide job families for 2015. So this is from that study then in 2015. And at that time, what was the future? 2020. So we're there now. So what are the skill sets that they thought 5 years ago that they would need today? So the table shows the top 10 skills for 2015, complex problem solving being the number one then, and then what they wanted from employees in 2020. As you can see from the slide, the top one in both is going to be that complex problem solving. What you see in both of those, and I've highlighted them here, is that the thinking and the decision-making skills were four out of the top six, and are now, with adding cognitive flexibility, five of the top 10 skill sets that employers were saying, hey, we're gonna need this, and then our employees, what that ideal toolkit coming in was going to be. The others are gonna be more your personality, people management side, but these five are all gonna fall under kind of that thinking, decision-making, kind of category. And so they can all be grouped and kind of brought down to one raw material, and that's critical thinking. Okay, you can gather all of those skills under one skill set, and that is that critical thinking raw material. So that is the basis for problem solving, for creativity, for decision making. And really what we're seeing is that it's becoming the number one workplace skill, not only now, but for the future. And so if you look at, what's going on with critical thinking, it is taught at A levels in many schools and colleges. It's viewed as a must-have competency in managerial and graduate level positions across a number of organizations and many industry sectors. Research by Pearson, so our parent company, as well as a variety of independent academics has shown that people who score well on critical thinking assessments, also rated by their supervisors as having good, analysts, problem solving skills, good judgment, good decision making, good overall performance, and they had the potential to move up in that organization. So breaking down, again, critical thinking makes up all of those, is the foundation and the raw materials for all of those, but what really is the definition of critical thinking? And that's that it's the ability to look at a situation, clearly understand it from multiple perspectives while separating facts from opinions, myths, prejudice, hunches, and other assumptions. So there's really a lot going into that definition. So let's break critical thinking down into three easy concepts. Okay, and so we call this the RED model, R, E, and D. And so the R stands for recognize assumptions. So this is the basis for the critical thinking, is being able to distinguish assumptions from facts and really recognize those unsound assumptions. The E is for evaluate arguments. So how well do we evaluate information? A really big, your ability to focus on that relevant and most accurate information that we're processing. And then once we've done both of those, how do we draw conclusions? How do we reach conclusions in a logical manner with the best information out there? And so doing all three of these is the basis for a good critical thinking skills. So again, why is critical thinking and why is doing all of this so important now and in the future with what's going on in this pandemic and all of that? And if you look at it, we are in a state of information overload. Okay, we consume over 34 million bits of information a day. So we're essentially consuming two books a day worth of information. Whether that's cell phones, whether that's social media, whether that's emails, whether that's webinars, podcasts, all of this, we've got all of this information coming in. What we need to do is we need to understand how to cut through that noise and make good decisions, because there's a thing, a newish term, fake news. Okay, I'm sure we've all heard it. Fake news is big news. It's hard, really hard to sort objective facts from opinions and bias. Again, whether that's political ads, whether that's the news, whether that's an email, an internal meeting, all of these things, we're bombarded with opinions and biases. While fake news is a relatively new term, the concept isn't. You can go all the way back to the 1700s, which George II, where there was some political unrest, you had printers printing information saying that he was sick, saying that he was dying, to create unrest. Again, fake news all the way back in the 1700s. It's really been around as long as there's been print media, as long as people have had an agenda. Opinions and bias are all over the place. Again, how do we cut through the noise and make good decisions? And really, again, why is this such an issue? Is that we're bombarded with all of this, okay? Everywhere we look. But why do we fall for fake news? Why do people get caught in this? And if you look at it, it's because thinking gets us in trouble. And I'll explain, okay? We are not aware of the amount of assumptions that we make every single day. We ignore a lot of information that doesn't support our vision. And we really don't understand or aren't fully aware of our perspective. And so all of this gets us in trouble and clouds our vision and really our decision-making when we want to solve problems or when we're making decisions. So breaking this down for you, so how do we think critically? Okay, there are many theories about how we process information, but the one which is widely accepted and fairly easy to understand is that we have two reasoning systems. Okay, type one is automatic. It's rapid. It's used for routine tasks such as driving, brushing your teeth, understanding simple sentences, calculations, 2 + 2. Okay, we don't have to think about that. It involves little reflection. It's subconscious, it's emotional, and it uses less load on our working memory. It is based on our past experiences, and this can be beneficial for daily tasks. However, type one is based on previous experience and judgment, and therefore it can lead to bias and error in judgment. So type two reasoning can override these automatic processes. So again, type one, it speeds things up. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just that sometimes we bring, in cutting corners, we can overlook some information and make some judgments that we shouldn't. So type two can override those automatic responses. It is slower reasoning. It's rational, it's explicit, it's more conscious. There's more effort, control, and really more working memory involved in this. So for example, parking in a tight parking spot, solving complex math problems, 15 times 24. Most of you, if you're gonna do that, would have to sit and stop. Okay, wait, I need to think about that, okay? How many of you have ever turned the radio down when you, I gotta park, I'm ordering, anything like that. It's taking more memory to do that. And so we have to concentrate more. So the thing is, they work hand in hand though. So for an example, a long time ago, we all used to take trains or, drive into work, okay? Seems like forever ago for a lot of us, I'm sure. But this process was probably routine. It required little attention. You didn't really have to think about it. The problem is now is that if you had to do it again, maybe there's disruptions. Maybe that normal train, maybe that normal route isn't the way you can go. This is where type two reasoning kicks in. Okay, now you have to think about it. Now you have to plan. Now you have to really think, how are you going to get there? Different people process information differently and may not always use type two active reasoning when required. So critical thinking is associated with the type two reasoning as it requires active attention. Research shows that those who are more active, open-minded thinkers are more likely to consider alternative possibilities, scenarios, and are able to weigh available evidence fairly and show less overconfidence in hasty conclusions. So obviously, if you wish, it's a super interesting topic, at least for me. If you're interested in reading more about type one, type two reasoning, Think Fast and Slow, great book that explains it a little bit more in detail. What I'm going to do, though, this is going to be our first interaction and first question of the day, a little problem for you. So, way of illustrating type one and type two thinking and reasoning. So some of you may have seen this before, but in this scenario, okay, you have a coffee, you can get a coffee and a cake, and they cost £1.10 in total, okay? The cake costs £1 more than the coffee. So in this scenario, how much does the coffee cost? I'll give you a second to think about that. If you just, again, in the chat, want to input some answers there. Okay, so I think everybody's got an answer. How many of you responded that the cake must cost 10p? Because if you're like me, the first time you saw this, you said, where the heck am I getting coffee and cake for £1.10?
Yeah, a few people, yeah. Jacob.
Yeah, good, okay. I had to go with easy math, at least for myself. So, sure. Where are you getting coffee and cake for £1.10? But then from there you said, hey, obviously it costs 10p, right? It's a pound difference. The correct answer is that the coffee costs 5p and the cake costs at a pound more, £1.05, for a grand total of £1.10. Okay. So when I first saw this, that type one reasoning kicked in. I just did the quick math. Hey, there's a pound difference, it's got to be 10p. What it's asking is there's got to be a difference of a pound. So if the coffee costs 5p, the cake has to cost £1.05, because if you subtract £1.05 from 5p, you get the pound. So that's that pound difference. And I'm sure, because every time I see this, I still have to stop and think, because it automatically jumps in my head. £1, crap, okay, I gotta go back. And those of you who've probably seen this before, again, it's that type one thinking just kicks in. When you sit back and look at it, you go, oh, okay, that makes sense. There's gotta be a pound difference between them, got it. Again, that's your critical thinking, type two overriding and kicking in that scenario. Okay. So this time I'll walk you through another, this is gonna be kind of more of a word problem, kind of a real life one here. So I'll read you this paragraph. Then I'll go ahead and put the questions up afterwards. Okay, so I'll read this real quick. This Jacob, not me, another Jacob, but it works for this. At 7:30, Jacob woke up. He stretched, jumped out of bed, opened the balcony door, and made himself a cup of tea in the kitchen. Then he went to the bathroom to rinse the sleep off. After his breakfast, he ran into the bedroom, kissed his wife, then his children. Then he picked up his bag, put on his jacket, and went out the door completely stressed. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and Dan, maybe you can help me with this if you see any of these come through. The first question is, what time did the alarm go off for Jacob? So if you could just in the chat there, just throw a couple of answers in there. And then just wait, I will do it at the end. I'll do all of them and then.
Sure, okay. Do you want to go to the previous slide just to put the question back up just in case?
No, I'll do it once we get the answers. So we'll just,
okay.
Yep. So again, it's using that critical thinking. What do we hear? What did we, our assumptions here? So,
right.
Has Jacob taken time to take a shower? So that's your second question. Okay. Does he live in an apartment or a house? Did his wife and children kiss him after breakfast? And did Jacob go to work completely stressed? Okay. So give a couple of seconds here for everybody to enter that in. So Dan, as far as responses to what time did the alarm go off, what kind of responses are you getting?
Yeah, we had a few, 7 a.m.
Okay.
Some people said we don't know what time.
Okay.
That's it so far.
Okay, perfect. So typically you get 7:30. If we go back and look, it doesn't actually say, it just says that he woke up at 7:30.
Yeah.
So our assumption, we think, well, I wake up by an alarm. Jacob must have woke up by an alarm. How about, did he take a shower? Has he taken time to take a shower?
Quite a few people said no.
No.
There were a handful that said yes as well. He did have a shower. So
yes,
I'd say
he did have a shower.
Yeah.
Okay. So going back to it, says he went to the bathroom and rinsed the sleep off. Could he have just washed his face? Could he have taken a shower? Again, your scenario, your assumptions, your perspective, you're putting that in there. So it doesn't necessarily say that he does.
No.
Okay? It's living in an apartment or a house.
Okay, most people said apartment.
Apartment.
Yeah, majority said apartment.
And I'm sure that's based off of, you know, upstairs, downstairs, balcony. But again, we're putting our assumptions into this. Open a balcony door. I know where we live in Oxford here, walking around the neighborhood, which we've gotten very familiar with on our walks. There's a lot of balconies off the back of some of these houses that they've built an extra thing. That's a house, you know? So again, we're putting our assumptions, we're connecting dots that may necessarily not be there, but also it could be. He absolutely could live in an apartment. It just doesn't say. Did his wife and children kiss him after breakfast?
Again, 50-50.
Right. It could be either way, because it doesn't say he kissed. It's he kissed his wife and kids. It didn't say necessarily that they kissed him back. We're assuming, we're putting our perspective in there. I know there's many days when I'm running out and I'm kissing the kids on the way out, but they're not. They're busy doing something else. And then the last one is, did he go to work completely stressed?
The majority have said yes.
Yes. This is the one that threw me. When I first saw this, I was like, yeah, obviously. And it's not until Dan really putting this together here that I realized at no place at all does it say he's where he's going.
Right.
Assume, because he did all the stuff that we do on our way to work, that he's going to work. All it says is he picked up his bag, put on his jacket, and went out the door completely stressed. He could have gone to the pub. I mean, that'd have been nice. You know, it, what we're, again, we're putting our scenario, we're putting our assumptions into that. Again, and he most likely probably did go. But again, this just illustrates that type one, type two thinking of, just because we're presented with the information, we're now connecting dots that may or may not be there, and using our assumptions, our bias, and our own perspective to then connect some dots. Which again, isn't necessarily bad or good depending on the scenario. In this scenario, it didn't affect, you know, but go back to, you know, business decisions, that can be an issue. So again, that's why the critical thinking side is so important. So how does that relate to job roles, I guess, is now where you go, okay? What we see is critical thinking is really important. In it's become to the point where it's important in all job roles, okay? The legal field is probably one of the biggest areas we see it in. It's almost the definition of being a lawyer, be able to, you know, recognize assumptions, evaluate facts and make quality decisions based on those facts. But you got the investment manager side down to the key workers, the nurses, the doctors. I mean, I can't even imagine their jobs with what they've had to deal with, the critical thinking decisions they've had to make in the last couple of months. And so in addition to job specific related tasks, you know, they would all use critical thinking skills to help them plan and organize and really prioritize courses of action. All of this, if not done right, can lead to damage to the person, to the team, or the organization as a whole. And we're seeing this, you know, we're one tweet or one negative experience away from damage limitation exercise. And so that's why it's important that this skill set is so important going forward. To have employees that have that high, you know, managers that have those high critical thinking skills. So our mission and really to help companies recruit excellent employees. Okay, if you look at it, around 70% of uni grads have a 2-1 or above. There's plenty of good candidates out there. The challenge is being able to find the best. We don't want good candidates, we want excellent. And often critical thinking is assessed at an early stage in recruitment. Great thing is that it's objective. The test provides a level playing field. It asks the so what question. I'll talk about the test here in a second. It asks the so what question. In that, so what, you got a first from, you know, a top university, or you had come from a certain socioeconomic background, or you have some past experience. So what? Can you do the job, and can you make quality decisions? And again, we all know people who have left school who have no qualifications, who have been doing apprenticeships for 3 years. You know, those, they could be extremely bright people with no qualifications, or similarly, we all know extremely qualified people who make bad choices. It's not just about what you know, it's about the decisions you make, and really critical thinking, the ability underpins this. So again, how do we cut through the noise, make good decisions? We need to identify and recruit people with good critical thinking skills. And so one way to test that is something that we offer called the Watson-Glaser Critical Thinking Assessments. You know, critical thinking involves both cognitive, so thinking and reasoning skills, as well as behavioral tendencies and bias. As such, it's really difficult to discern critical thinking skills through, you know, a CV or a job interview. And many employees choose to use psychometric assessments as part of the recruitment process to help them evaluate candidates. Especially, you know, just heard earlier that you're running an assessment center, you know, virtually, you're not able to sit down and give these tests in person. You know, the Watson Glazer is available online, it's available in multiple languages, and it can be used to complement an already robust hiring process by identifying those individuals with higher critical thinking abilities. So going back to why is critical thinking so important, there's been a link drawn between critical thinking and workplace performance. So in some research carried out in 2010 and 2011, it sampled barrister students. So the Watson Glazer was found to be more predictive of workplace performance than A-level points, degree class, or whether or not the student attended a Russell Group university. So these studies provided strong evidence in support of the tool's usage in the law industry, in particular for barrister training selection. Following on from this, everyone wishing to train as a barrister is required to complete the bar course aptitude test, which is composed of Watson Glazer items. So since 2012, the results of this study helped to determine that anyone wishing to train as a barrister has to pass a critical thinking test. So the Bar Council Board recognized this as a key skill. You know, we have other examples of critical thinking and workplace performance. So it's not just the legal field. This is just the most direct correlation, or not just, it just applies the best to this because of what they have to do with those assumptions and recognizing that. Again, happy to discuss, you know, other options, other industries. I think we've gone through and shown to really, it's not just a singular job. It's not just a job skill. It's a life skill with all of the information that we're processing. So it wouldn't be a presentation on thinking, or just a presentation on, in general, without a cheesy picture of you know, Einstein and a quote from him. You know, right now we cannot solve, what he said was, we can't solve our problems with the same thinking we use to create them. You know, we are not going to be able to stay competitive in the fourth industrial revolution, this pandemic, post-pandemic, with the same skills and the same employees we were using previously. Things are changing, okay? Going back to that, smaller, nimble teams being able to make quick decisions and then spread that through the network. But again, correct quick decisions. And that's where those critical thinking skills come in, and why it's so important to ask that so what question to identify that talent. So as just kind of finishing up here, again, critical thinking, it's really becoming that number one workplace competency and life skill. You know, it directly affects an employee's potential performance. You're going to see higher performance in the job role based on higher critical thinking ability. And again, it can be, it's designed to, the testing, ask that so what question, but to enhance, not replace, an already robust recruiting process. So with that, Dan, we'll open it up to questions.
Absolutely. Jacob, thank you very much. That was really interesting, and especially having an example to test us all there and show that we are hardwired. We have certain habits of thought that leads us to sometimes the wrong conclusion. So I guess it's quite a challenge to undo that, take a step back and approach things in a more critically thinking way, as you're suggesting. So it's a very useful skill for life, as you're saying. And also, is this something that we should be expecting from all graduates, or for some roles it's going to be more important than others? Because there are other skills. On the other slide you showed,
yeah,
creativity had come a bit higher, hadn't it?
Mm-hmm.
In those 5 years. So my first question is critical thinking now, you know, that should be a base level skill that we expect, or is it for certain types of roles?
It's a base level because it's going to be the raw materials of those. So creativity, there's again links to that in the critical thinking side of things. And so you're looking at a base level ability portion. Again, like I said, in the legal field, wow, there's so much, it applies a lot more, and it's easier to see how it applies to the legal side. But we're really seeing it in all roles to be important. And the other thing is it really can be that decider between, wow, we got five candidates, they're all amazing. Great, sure. Let's really, they all look great on paper, they all sound great, they all got the interpersonal skills. Let's look at that ability that objectively that we maybe can't see on a CV or in that interview. How well do they make decisions? And we've seen just through some of our clients where they've sat down, they've had candidates that have scored amazingly on every test imaginable. But those are school tests, so they're really good, adding, subtracting, multiplying, dividing, English skills, all of that. But then they just don't have the critical thinking skill sets. So they look great on paper, they are good in school, but would that necessarily translate into the real world? And they've used that to be able to help make some decisions on some candidates.
Sure. I mean, so we'd hope with
the legal side.
Sure. I mean, we'd hope with graduates coming out of university, having studied 3, 4, 5 years, they would have this skill for critical thinking, more so than a school leaver. Some of the questions coming through are, how do we actually accurately test for this?
Mm-hmm.
Any suggestions?
Well, and that's where the Watson-Glaser comes in. So we're on the third edition now. Again, it's an objective assessment that asks specific critical thinking questions and works basically that scenario that I walked you guys through with Jacob Leaves the House and all of that. It's right. Similar to those, how well does somebody recognize assumptions, evaluate arguments, and make decisions? So that's one way to do that.
Are there any particular degree types that have critical thinking hardwired into them? I mean, STEM subjects, presumably, or am I wrong? Are arts subjects stronger? Have you noticed any disparity?
I would say when you're looking at it, it's critical thinking is one of those hard things because people think that they can learn it. And it's not necessarily, if you have no critical thinking skills, you can't all of a sudden go on in a course and learn how to think critically. As far as a skill, it's really an ability. You can become more aware of it, and some people are more aware of it in some industry or some areas of study, I would think, are more inclined to have people that think critically. Give you an example, my wife, she's a scientist, she works at Oxford. I gave her that coffee and cake analogy for the problem. She got it right away. I had the opposite problem. Yeah. Well, I had to explain to her why people don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, so she couldn't not make the connection, basically. And so I would say, yeah, STEM are probably more inclined to do that. But that's, again, that's an assumption. So that's why you would test that. Because just because somebody's really good at the maths, the sciences, all it doesn't necessarily mean they make good decisions.
Okay. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, is it similar to thinking out of the box or lateral thinking, this process that your wife has and certain graduates are able to naturally display? Is there a downside of having that skill? Do they lack something else because of that?
Not necessarily. Again, that would be not in, you can look at both sides of that. I mean, because I've with somebody who scored a 99 on the Watson-Glaser, just unbelievable critical thinking skills, made them hard to work with.
Right.
Didn't have the interpersonal skills. So that's what we say. It's designed to complement it already. You still need to do the personality. You still need to do the interviews. You still need to look at the CV. But again, then you look at my wife and I've helped and some of the scientists that she hang out with. hangs, they all have high critical thinking based on just what the conversations I've had. Again, they haven't taken any assessments on that, but there's still the interpersonal, they still have that as well.
Sure.
So I would say it's a case by case basis with that. Again, that would be an assumption to just go that route.
Okay. Can you go back to the slide where you showed the different skills in demand from 2015 and 2020?
Yep. Sure, there's a faster way to do this, but
it's a quick refresher there.
There we go.
Right, because creativity in 2015 mm-hmm. was 10, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that's jumped considerably.
Yeah,
5 years. Can you explain that?
Because we don't look specifically at creativity. I would have to go back to their whole overview of that. The fact that it's a critical thinking skill set.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I would making assumptions and connecting dots, saying that based on the fact that, you know, complex problem solving still there, that critical thinking still there, judgment, decision making, cognitive flexibility, all of that takes an element of creativity.
Sure.
And again, going back to that, okay, wait, hold on, let me think out of the box. And I talked about it in one of the slides, that it shows that people are they do think more laterally, they do process information differently and look at different options with higher thinking skills. So that would be kind of that connection there that I would make with that.
Okay. I mean, when we speak to a lot of recruiters at the moment, before all of this happened, resilience was talked about a lot. And, you know, all of us are developing that right now as we're dealing with so many different scenarios and situations and in our lives and work. So it was quite interesting not to see resilience on that list as well. What are your thoughts on that?
That is something I think we've seen as well. So again, you got to remember where this is coming from. This is 5 years ago from all of these companies. This is what they were seeing coming out of that. I think really we've had a lot of requests lately since this has started for the resilience side as well. So I would agree. I think people are seeing that's that's a personality, so that then falls into these other five.
Sure.
So if they did that survey today, they would say, going for today's skill set, they would add resiliency. So maybe that would replace one of these other, maybe the service orientation or something like that. But I think that's something that's really cropped up in the last year, that we've seen more and more requests, and really since the whole pandemic has started. So I would agree with you. I would just say that would fall into probably more the personality side. And we still look at that as well. So.
Sure. I mean, for many graduating students, it's going to be quite a steep learning curve. And for some, they may fall into a negative mindset, you know, oh, there's no jobs or thoughts of giving up. So now is the perfect test for graduates to take small steps and come through this. So when inevitably they're asked, what did you do in the lockdown? They can give a really good answer that will demonstrate resilience. I think that will be quite a dividing factor for graduates over this period, those that do and don't.
Yep.
Be interesting to see. We've got a question from Jenny. What with working remotely as potentially being the new normal, maybe not 100%, but certainly maybe on a part-time basis, how can graduates develop soft skills when they're working remotely? When you're in an office, you have the interaction, the sort of creative energy, the exchange of ideas and communicating face-to-face. Potentially, you know, that may not be available if you're working from home more so than in the office.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be, I mean, if you're doing that exclusively, the definition of soft skills maybe is going to change. I think we all have seen, we've been on enough conference calls to see that some people don't have conference call etiquette, good conference call etiquette. You know, being on time is still, you know, huge. You know, people being late for conference calls and all of that, people, you know, maybe not muting themselves. I still think there's going to be some soft skills through that right. are still going to be transferable. There's, I know we use chat so much. And even though maybe we're not face to face talking with somebody, you know, saying good morning, not just coming in and going, hey, I need this.
Sure.
There's still that, I don't know that, and maybe I don't know if I'm completely answering it, but there's still that etiquette that's going to be involved. You're still going to have to interact with somebody somewhere, somehow.
Sure. Yeah, it's a new way of communicating digitally as opposed to face-to-face, I suppose, which if most graduates have grown up with it, it shouldn't be too much of a bigger step for them to do, but it just changes the whole dynamic of working when, you know, you may be working remotely and maybe working in the office. There's different aspects that, you know, if you're an introvert or an extrovert, you may actually prefer one over the other. So it's quite interesting how that will shape the workforce as we go on for new graduates.
Well, and I think an important thing to see is that how you communicate digitally with friends, maybe via text and over FaceTime or something like that, is different from how most people should through business. So it's still gonna, even though you're not physically in front of somebody, there's still that etiquette, there's still those soft skills that are gonna need to be in place to do that, I think.
Yeah, it's that could inevitably creep in, that sort of casual nature of social media could then creep into workplace when there's a definite divide. It has to be more professional and, as you say, more punctual and courteous and be aware of how you come across. So that's absolutely to be seen.
Another good question though.
Yeah. Another question. Thank you very much from the Welsh Contact Centre Forum. Is there a practical way of assessing critical thinking other than a questionnaire, particularly when running an assessment centre?
I mean, the best way that we've seen to do it is through the questionnaire. It is so hard through just face-to-face interaction to be able to walk somebody through that scenario. Because again, just asking them questions like you said, hey, how did you handle your downtime during lockdown? They're giving you information outside of just assessing that. The great thing about assessing it in a test like that is the objectivity. Everybody's getting the same chance. Everybody, it's a level playing field. Again, it's that so what question. And that's what most, I think, recruiting processes miss sometimes, is that interviews, CVs, some assessment center questions, some people may see it differently. It's objective through that, or, you know, it's subjective. So this, it's the reason it's so successful as it is, there's one way to answer it, that's how it goes, and it's the same for everybody. And so that's why it's been such a valuable tool, I think.
Perfect. We're almost out of time, Jacob. That has opened up a very interesting debate that we can't really cover in 1 hour. So hopefully this will trigger off further questions in the GRN forum on LinkedIn, which everyone is welcome to join. This presentation will also be recorded, so we will circulate it to other members. I've had 65 of you along this morning. Thank you all very much for tuning in and listening to Jacob.
Yes, thank you.
The next webinar will be on the 3rd of June, and we'll be talking to 4 graduates to get their viewpoint. on how they're dealing with the situation right now. So by all means, do register for that event. They are all free. They're all recorded. And we are looking forward to that next one in 2 weeks' time. Jacob, thank you very much. That ends the webinar. Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Have a good day.